As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hello, this is The Ruck, and we are only 4 days from the Premiership Rugby restart. On Friday, it opens when Harlequins play Sale. By the end of the weekend, every team will have played, and then it comes faster and more furious than ever before. What will rugby post-lockdown look like? How do you prepare for it? And who is going to win the thing? On Thursday, we'll have our usual rabble of familiar voices telling you that they've got the answers. But for this edition of the pod, we've gone with three men right at the heart of the title fight. This is a special edition of The Ruck. I am Owen Slott, and I am joined here by three title-challenging directors of rugby.
We've got three title challengers. I'll start from the top in order of where they sit in the table. So in second place is Sale, DOR, Steve Diamond. Steve, great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for the invite.
Sitting in third at the table is Bristol Bears. Pat Lamb is the DOR, and Pat, it's great to have you on. Thank you very much for coming. In fourth place in the table at the moment is Northampton Saints. DOR is Chris Boyd. Chris, lovely to have you on as well. We're just days away from this restart, and I'd just like to start by asking, at the start of most seasons, and this isn't even the start of a season, but it feels like it, but at the start of most seasons, we know roughly what to expect. We've a reasonable idea of which teams will be strong and where most clubs are in their development. So I just want to ask you, this time round, we've had 5 months off, 3 months of almost complete lockdown. There'll be no crowds. We'll be playing in August. Can we possibly know what is coming our way over the next 2 months of incessant club rugby? Go on, Dimes, you go first.
Well, I think if you play in Manchester at the AJ Bell, you're used to playing without crowds anyhow, so it's not going to be too much of a difference for us. The other two clubs who are in this, Northampton and Bristol, get significantly higher crowds, so I think we've got an advantage there, lads. But I think form goes out the window because it's that long ago, if I'm honest, and I know in this restart process, a lot of stuff's been taken out of Premiership football, but the one thing I took out of Premiership football was Leicester City with the informed side with Liverpool at the break, at the lockdown, and when they came back, they were probably performing like a bottom four side. So I think it just goes to show that, you know, you can't take anything for granted. You just got to get all your basics right and try and crack on. And I think form, I know, fortunately, we're sat in the positions we're in at the moment, but I think things could change dramatically over the next 2 months if we aren't mentally switched on and if the lads aren't up for it.
I agree with Dimes. It's just a fascinating challenge. It certainly has been for all of us as you try and prepare your squads. You know, things that no one expected to happen, but it's like life, you know. There's so many things that happen in life, and it's what you're going to do about it. And the attitude and the coming up with a plan on how you're going to deal with it and trying to put that in place. But I think the exciting thing is it's tough when you're training. I know when we played, and I hated training. Training was just a means to get to the game. And I take my hat off to a lot of the players, not just our players, that hang in there to try and, when you don't know when it's going to come back. And what's been pleasing is once they finally set a date, you generally sort of lift and everybody, okay. And there's the hope that we're going to all stay safe to get there. And so as we approach, you know, a week out, just over a week out, the general feeling is, and I'm, you know, pretty confident to say that's everybody. Everyone just is excited to get going. But there's also the unknown. And all you do is address it, you know, no crowds. A lot can change real fast over the next certainly couple of weeks, 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Do you feel that sort of same sense of unknown, Chris? I mean, can you look at your squad and go with it, say with any confidence, I think these players are in the right place and those players, other for various reasons, I'm not so sure of?
I was just interested to start with whether Pat was agreeing with Dimes about the crowds as well, eh? Look, I think there is unknown, but I think all of us would probably agree that some guys this extended break for them is the longest extended break they've had for a heck of a long time. And, you know, you talk to a guy like Owen Franks, played international rugby consecutively over a long period of time. He's never had this time before to train. So I don't have any doubt that most sides are going to be in physically pretty good nick, particularly running nick. I think it's been up to the coaching groups and the environments to transform that physical bit into rugby players. So from going from athletes into rugby players, you know, and that's been dictated to a little bit with the COVID and the level of physical contact you can have. I doubt that the skill level is going to be able to match the intensity to start with. And I think, you know, the big elephant in the room is probably the change interpretation of referees' rules.
I also think that, you know, we've been involved in various other conversations with the league and with how to get us going again. Is to a certain extent, and I know I'm considered to be old school, but to a certain extent, I think we've all forgotten about the break that everybody's had. And we're all conscious of getting breaks in for players moving forward. But I can say this honestly, and I think you lads will probably be the same. Not one player has come to me and said, listen, I'm worried about next season. They haven't. They're just saying, come on, how do we get going again? When are we going? And of course, the middle of next year, it'll be tough. It'll be tough for everybody, but equally, everybody's going to be in the same boat. We're all going to have players who are knackered, and it's how we manage that is it, we'll see who's the most successful teams are. But we've got to look at it like every other person looks at it in every other walk of life. What's happened, none of us have ever had before, have we? We've never been involved in an outbreak, a pandemic, so we just got to get on with it and be enthused about it. And of course, we'd like Speckies there, but we can't get them. But you know, I know there's three or four pubs where I live who are all talking now about streaming the games to those pubs. So there's a massive interest there. It's just, it's our jobs to, like Chris says, try and match the enthusiasm with the skill in the first month. And if we get that, I think it'll be fantastic. I really do.
Do you think at all that because of what's happened, that I guess the environment in your training groups must be slightly different? I mean, there's people around in masks every day. Is there any kind of feeling amongst the players that the circumstances are different and they kind of, that they have a responsibility, if you like, to lift the fans, to lift the TV viewers? Is it less all about winning and slightly more about spectacle entertainment?
It's always about winning. You know that.
Just thought I'd check.
That's what people come to watch the game. They come to watch the game and they want to see people at their best. And only at their best when they're focused on getting their jobs done well as for the team and winning. You know, that's ultimately what people want to see. They don't, you know, and the entertainment comes from that. You're never going to please everybody. Some people love the 6-3 games. Some people don't like the 45-36 games, all those sort of things. But I think what people do like is when people giving it everything out there in the battlefield, and you know, and I'm that as the boys said, that's what you're going to see. Everyone's going to be keen and so excited to get back out there. And it's not going to be perfect, and it never is, but it's just that sense. Let's get going, as Dime said.
Yeah, and the other thing, I don't know, Chris and Pat are the same, but when we normally come back after Six Nations, you've got your players who are absolutely flogged. And you give them a bit of rest and you're hopefully going to a quarterfinal in one of the competitions, or you're trying to get in the top four. Where now, at least, we've got pretty much full squads. And that's what people want to see. People want to see, in our case, people want to see Faf de Klerk, don't they? Mm. In your case, they want to see Charles Pitout. They want to see Dan Biggar. They want to see the best players playing.
And I don't want to see either of those first two. Be happy for you to rest them on that occasion, Dimes and Pat. Happy, very happy.
Yeah, we'll all be holding our cards closely to our chest there, won't we? Well, that's what people want to see. For me, and maybe more so for you, Pat, being in Bristol, being a big sporting city, and Northampton has got the cricket and what have you, but generally a rugby town. Up in Manchester, the lockdown, bizarrely enough, has given us more of an even sort of showing with the football and the cricket, because there isn't 100,000 fans going to a game every weekend in Manchester at the minute. So when you do walk down the street or in the pub, you know, people are talking to not just me but the players and what have you about, oh, you know, you've had a great start, and you know, can you finish it off? Whereas that wouldn't have happened in Manchester. Faf de Klerk come back from the World Cup and he could walk into any restaurant and nobody would say anything to him, whereas if that was in Bristol or that was in Northampton, he'd be mobbed. And that's the thing that I'm finding. There's people have sort of, the participation people, i.e. the supporters who can't go to football at the minute, are having a look round at other things, and seems to be generated a bit more impetus up here than it normally does.
In terms of being able to know what you're facing and predict the sort of games you're playing, so you three are clubs that are clearly title chasers. At the bottom end of the table, there's a different dynamic. There's no relegation. So can you guess at what you're going to be facing when you play those sort of clubs? Because they have the opportunity to experiment, to put more of their younger players in to effectively prepare a team for the next season that starts in November. Does that make sense, or do you think they'll just be all out all the time?
No, I think you're selling one thing short here, that with the change in Europe, where the top eight sides are going to qualify for the Heineken Cup next year, I think every team, probably bar Saracens, would fence themselves as having a chance of getting to the top eight. So I think realistically every club will say there's a couple of lines in the table, one at the top four for playoffs, one at the top eight. And I mean, if I was sitting there, even Leicester have had a bad start to the season, you know they're going to be a different side when they come out. They'll be sitting there and saying, if we have a good run, we can make Heineken Cup next year. So until that line disappears for all clubs, I think she's all on. Everything will be flat out, mate.
What would you expect from the two sides that I find sort of very hard to put your finger on? Look, you mentioned Leicester and Gloucester as well. They've had huge changes in their coaching setup. I mean, is that just wait and see what comes our way?
I think you look at the quality of the coaches gone there. You know, Steve Borthwick and George going into that area. It's always a challenge when you go to a new club, but there's also, you get the spike of, all right, you know, players like, okay, I've got to start from scratch to impress and so forth. So, yeah, it is an unknown, but the thing that hasn't changed is the playing group. There's a couple of guys obviously added in and there, but we don't have both clubs. Oh, no, we have Gloucester second, sorry. I'm just so focused on the Saracens at the moment. But, you just don't know what's going to come, but I think I'd be surprised if they changed too much.
I also think, Pat, like, if we're watching any sport, if you get a new coaching setup, there's always a spike, always. There's always an improvement because of the natural thing of trying to impress and trying to get your position and stuff. And the guys who's come in, whether it's George or whether it's Steve Borthwick, they've got different ideas. And ultimately, all the teams, let's be honest, the side that's going down has got a fantastic team, Saracens, aren't they? All the teams have got great squads, pretty even squads, and that's why the league is so good and so tough. So I think they're the danger teams, if I'm honest. With no disrespect to anybody else, they're the ones who will want to make a mark in the last half of this season and to get in that top eight, because that's where everybody wants to be. All the players that Chris has signed or Pat signs or I've signed, part of the negotiation with me is always telling them, look, we've got to be a European main competition side, and we've got to be a top four side if we're going to get any recognition, we're going to achieve anything. And I think that those coaches, George Skivington being relatively young, but you know what, I was 35 when I got my first job. Pat, you would probably know similar. Boydie, how old were you when you first got a job at coaching at that level? Similar?
Young, about that age.
Yeah, we all start somewhere and we all excuse my language, we all make a mess, don't we? I got sacked 2 years in at Saracens in my second job, and I drove up the M6 thinking I'm never going to do this again, I'm going to start building houses again. And I started building houses again 2 years later. I'm coaching Russia. I'm thinking, what am I doing? I'm mad, but you can't stay away from it. And you have to, that's what's in us all, really. And for the good of the bad, you know. And George Skivington will have a lot to prove. And he's brought a lot of good lads around him by the looks of it. So he'll be, there'll be a handful, Gloucester, because anybody knows Gloucester are always a handful down there, whether they've got a crowd or whether they haven't. It's a real earthy club. The other lot,
an option. Russia an option for the World Cup in 2027?
Well, I'm trying to get myself an ambassadorial job at the moment.
So I knew you'd be
me sat next to Vladimir Putin on TV. Don't be too shocked.
He's a good mate of yours, I understand.
Well, I have shaken hands and gone down on one knee before for Vladimir. But I actually had a great 4 years in Russia, to be fair, and they're a little bit off it at the minute, but I think where the Russians The Russians and the Brits are very similar in their humour. And there's a misconception, I always say, that when you go on holiday and you meet an obnoxious Russian man pushing in at the bar, then you equally see that with other races. What the Russians do very well, they seize the opportunity, and they've seen COVID, and they've seen that rugby is in a position where I don't think there's too many countries could say now in 7 years' time we're prepared to put £100 million bond up for the profit of the World Cup. And that's what Russia have done with the Winter Olympics. They did it with the World Cup football. And I think they're a long shot, but you know, there's more people play rugby in Russia than there is in Scotland.
You weren't trading tanks and missiles when you were up there, were you?
No, I never got to that extent. But my brother has lived and worked in Russia for 32 years. So I had a good introduction there. And in my previous life in Russia, lads, I was given the best advice about learning the Russian language. And my boss at the time said to me, look, Steve, we'll pay this much money, but in 12 months' time, if you come in this office and you can have a conversation similar to your brother who speaks fluent Russian, then I'll double your wages. And I had a lesson every day for 12 months, lads.
We know what your driver is then.
Well, yeah.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Chris, you just were mentioning the refereeing interpretations, how you think that might be the biggest influence on how the rugby we see is different over the next couple of months. Do you three feel that because the championship is effectively going to be won in over a summer, over summer months, that'll have a big impact? You know, a traditional season, you have a bit of summer, an autumn, a winter. You know, you have every season, but this title is going to be decided by the team that plays the best summer rugby, surely.
I think it's probably more likely to be decided by the team that can stay fit and healthy. I think that's the luck of that's going to be with such a congested... You know, if you say that the normal season is a marathon, we've probably got a 200-metre sprint?
Yeah.
Maybe a 400. It's probably more likely to be a 200. And, mate, if you get a couple of injuries in critical positions and you can't get guys right, that's a factor. By the time we adjust to the referees' invigorated attitude towards interpreting the law differently and we understand what they want, that settles down, that's probably going to be 3 or 4 or 5 weeks in by the time you look at what happened in Aotearoa. So that's probably, you know, we're well past the 100-metre mark by the time the thing settled down. So there's a lot of things riding on success, but I firmly believe keeping your squad fit, healthy and injury-free and ready to play is going to be as tricky as anything.
you know, just like we're all watching the games and out of interest through what's going on, you're also hoping that Spreaders and his crew, and I'm sure they are watching and learning. And so we're not going to go to the extreme of round one and two to where it's got to now. And then obviously, you know, they're analysing it and we start off at a more balanced state at round one. But the big thing then is obviously the consistency from game to game, week to week. On the back of that is what we're all after.
But I think the referees could learn a lot, not just the interpretations of what they're going to be putting in. But when Simon Orange bought Sale and Jed, they said to me, we don't understand it. Sale are really good at home, but really poor away from home. And I said, well, just look at any sport. It's very similar. And we're not having crowds. How many referees are influenced by crowds? You know, the simple not straight at a line out. You get to Leicester, Sale always throw three not straights. Yeah, on Monday morning when you check it out, there's never a not straight in it. And I think that could help the referees.
It'll be interesting, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The real things I think about are not straights at a scrum or a line out are nothing. They should just, within reason, just let them go. Let's get the ball in play. And I think, hopefully, looking at the Southern Hemisphere Super Rugby, the way the breakdown's being done is brilliant. That's what we want to say. We've got players who can play if we get decent ball. And that interpretation of only having that one movement when you're carrying the ball is good. Your players are like my players. Lou Diego, for example, I'm in awe of him at training. For such a huge man, his ability in the breakdown is the ball literally comes 2 metres back. It's incredible. And it's the same technique. It's obviously been brought up well and coached well, but, you know, his natural stuff. So I think with the refs, if they get that breakdown sorted out and the scrum and the scrums, I always think the scrum's getting better. When we played, we always forget, don't we? You speak to your mum and dad and they talk about the good old days. They never call them the good old days. And I come from the time when scrums were scrums. We did about 2 kilometres in a game. And now it's, you know, nearly 40 minutes ball in play. It's fantastic. I feel for the referees, mate. I really do. I mean, of course, we're all critical and we all have a go. And I have been worse than most in the past. But in reality, I think of all the cuts that are happening in rugby at the minute, there shouldn't be many cuts at the refereeing level. We should be pumping as much money into them boys as we can.
Sounds like you've been doing some deep thinking during COVID, Dimes. You've had time
in Russia.
On the errors of your ways in the past.
Well, I'm reformed. Born again.
You're born again.
Born again. Born again, rugby thug.
Hallelujah.
Lay Lamb was no saint, let's be honest.
As you said, born again.
I think the other exciting thing is Eddie Jones has changed a lot. I know I've not had a direct conversation, I'll have one next week with him, but just the way he's dealing with the England players who we've got, I think he's learned through experience that, you know, he's got to look after these players that are ours, effectively, when they go to England camp. And the days of them coming back absolutely knackered, you know, we know it's a different level there, but I think he's listening to everybody at the moment and taking on board the amount of rest. And you, Chris, you hit the nail on the head. The sides that look after the players best are the sides that will have the most success over the next 12 months, without a doubt.
I'm sure you're right, Steve, but given the congestion of the calendar of the next 2 months, do you three not anticipate some hard decisions that will be put on you where you'll want to pick your best players, but you'll also want to rest them? I mean, that's inevitable that's going to be put on you.
Yeah, without a doubt, but I think the big thing is communication. At the end of the day, it's all very well, it's about a player being at his best. And so I think the linkage between when that player, so Kyle Sinclair, when he's with us and when he's with England, the communication and the individual player management load for Kyle is across both teams. So, you know, as Steve said, you know, talking to Eddie about visiting and going through what that plan looks like for when he's here, and we marry that up with what his plans, and we look at his schedule. So we manage, instead of we managing England players and Bristol players, we're managing all the individuals and looking at their schedules. And remember, it's a living document. Player's suddenly gone for, you know, we plan that he's going to be busy. He has an injury and he's out for 4 or 5 weeks. Suddenly, he's not interested in breaks. He wants to get back playing and get going again. So you're adjusting as you go along. But the key, like anything, is having a plan for that player and all our players to make sure, as Chris said, that they get to a point where they can actually perform. It's all very well. I mean, I've been stung with that before when I was coaching the Blues with All Blacks coming back, and, you know, whether they're overcooked or undercooked. you know, but everyone's looking at it going, oh, you got this player and that player, but if they're not at their best, it's a waste of time anyway, not at their best for the club. So, you know, sometimes the squad player is probably better to put out there, but, you know, it's all about managing his plan.
I agree. I have a really good example of it with Ben and Tom Curry. Obviously, identical twins, started the same day, train, very rarely get injured. Tom's played 57 games for Sale, and Ben's played 104 games for Sale. So the perception is Tom's better than Ben, but in reality, I don't have that perception. I think, well, you know, at the top end, Tom might be a little bit more physical, a little bit, but what does he do for us every week? Well, he's not here every week. So you've got to manage that sort of role. What incentivizes him? What gets him going? Is it playing for England or playing for us? Fortunately, I think it's playing for us, and England's the byproduct of that. The communication's massive. Through the dark times of COVID, when we were all making the pay cuts and we have to sit them down and say this, I didn't hear too many rumblings out of Northampton. I didn't hear anything out of Bristol. I didn't hear anything out of Sale publicly, because we all communicated the right way. None of us are happy about it, but that's the way we had to do it. And I think the communication is the biggest thing. And that's why I don't give a shit what people think about me outside the club, how I run it. It's up to them. But I know not many people leave me and people want to join us, because you don't only sell them the vision. On all three of us are in a similar boat. The way I look at it is I don't have to chat somebody up too much about joining Sale these days. I say, go and speak to your mate who already plays here. Have a word with him. He'll tell you more about what we do than I can tell you. We can put the vision in front of him, but it's that communication that's important. And I feel the two of the clubs on here with me have got that. That's why they're top clubs, and have been for a long time. But also, furthermore, the England communication is getting better. And if that happens, then we're all working on the same thing. We're all on the same agenda.
Has been communication with Rassi.
Good. Very good, if I'm honest. Very, very good. Well, it should be. I've got 2/3 of his bloody team. In fact, we had a good cricket match the other week. We had England versus South Africa and the rest of the world. And the rest of the world won. I was umpire, so they were always going to win.
Would you concur with Steve when he said that Eddie's balancing the workload of his England players better for the clubs?
Well, I think his intent, the noise that's coming out is his intention is better. We'll wait and see what happens in November and January, February. And I think in a heightened load program, we all have to share the burden. The player, the country and the club all have to have an agenda that's well connected and well aligned. So we'll wait and see. But there's certainly the noises are positive between the Players Association, who represent the players, you know, the DIRs and the owners and the CEOs who represent the clubs, and you know, the RFU, often represented by Conor O'Shea and Eddie. So I think at the moment there's good intent, and hopefully that'll come to fruition.
Just a few more quick questions, guys. Pat's boys have got Saracens on this first coming weekend. What are you expecting of Saracens over the next 2 months?
I'm expecting, you know, their whole season, as they've said publicly and we all know, is around winning the Champions Cup. So you look at, you forget everything else and you look at the legacy that they've built. You look at the potential, the players that they, the squad that they put out there and the quality there. So we're expecting no difference. That the challenge of trying to deal with that group is going to be tough. But we're excited by that. And, you know, so we're preparing for all guns blazing from them.
If it's not yourselves, who would you say are favourites to win this title?
I think the beauty is of this competition is that probably the 6, 7, 8 teams can have a chance. And because we're in the situation of midweek games, effectively, most of us have 4 games in the first 14 days. And that's a huge swing, you know, in that table. So by the time we get to September, it could be all over the place. And that's the importance of the start and what's going to happen. You know, you're either going to see a big change or you're going to see a break. It's hard to call. All you got to worry is make sure that you're ready for it. It makes it exciting because normally you start a preseason, you come in, it has been predominantly like a preseason, been away for so long. And we come in at this time normally anyway, August, we're getting ready to play a couple of preseason games, which we haven't been able to do. And then you expect, you know, trophies are available in June. So it's a long way away. You know, trophies are available in October. That adds to the excitement as well and the need. And everyone realises, as Chris said, that the Heineken Cup, at worst, is available for everybody as well. Everyone's alive for that, bar Saracens. Come September, it's going to be a completely different ball game to what it is now. And, you know, may the best team win.
Steve, Chris, are you prepared to say who you back for this this title?
I think there's the favourites are Exeter, if I'm honest. They've got the experience of being in the final several times and winning it. I think Chris has turned Northampton around. Pat has rebuilt Bristol. And we're now on a level playing field with the other clubs in spending abilities. So I think we've all got a shot at it, as the other clubs just below the top four have got a shot at it. For me, personally, I think Exeter are the favourites. I think if we could get a top four home finish, then it would be great for us. And it's then a different competition, the top four. You know, if you can get a home draw in that, it will be different this year with no crowds or very little crowds, I suspect. So it will make it even more even. But yeah, I got to say, common sense is telling me Exeter, Bristol second, Northampton third, and we're probably seventh or eighth.
One thing that is there, and that's what I always admired, is Exeter and Saracens. You know, that coaching group is going into the 11th or 12th season, I think. Chris is into second. I'm only into second season as far as premiership goes. And, you know, Dimes, you've been around a while, but...
I'm 10. I'm going into 11.
Yeah. And again, it's no coincidence of you get, you know, sustainability. You can build the culture and people know what it's all about. So...
It does have a big influence on it, I say.
Chris, final word?
No, I agree with Dimes. I think Exeter will be hard to beat, but not impossible. So even last year, you know, there was half-time you would have fancied Exeter to have won the premiership last year, but they came up short, which, you know, will make them hungrier again. So I think they're the team to beat, but I think, like the other boys, I think, you know, there's four or five or six or seven or eight teams that can certainly force their way into that top four. I think it's hugely competitive. And there's a Nats whisker between one and the other and a bit of luck and a bounce of a ball. And, you know, suddenly it could be a different picture. And I think Pat's right. How you get out of the blocks and get a lead. You know, there might be an Usain Bolt who can come from the back and come through the field. But I think really the teams that get a good start are probably going to get a reasonable finish.
Okay, thank you to Steve Diamond, Pat Lamb and Chris Boyd for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the pod. If you did, please do spread the word. And also, please do come back again for another pre-restart Ruck preview, which will come to you with the usual crowd on Thursday. Stay well and we will see you then.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Searching for the perfect gift idea for that hard-to-buy person on your list? The Allbirds Wool Runner is a natural fit. The Wool Runner is super cozy, super comfy, and super giftable. It's made with ZQ-certified merino wool, a naturally cozy material that offers next-level comfort and a lower environmental impact. The cushioned midsole and versatile design offer all-day comfort in a classic style you can wear every day, even in a winter wonderland. And its fully machine washable construction makes it easy to keep your shoes looking like new. Allbirds shows off the Wool Runner's carbon footprint right on the shoe so you can see the difference for yourself. On top of that, they actually offset that carbon footprint to zero, making the Wool Runner completely carbon neutral, so you can stay cozy and tread lighter on the planet. This holiday season, give tidings for comfort and coziness with the Allbirds Wool Runner. Discover your perfect pair at allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.